us trampling on the stones. It's us down, down to the bone. Blood is thick, waters were known well, cousins were kept apart, mothers were often memories, fathers were not favored on the farm, for he could do some harm, he could wreck the master scheme, for he, brothers, could dream. Your mama ain't no saint, your daddy died in a shallow stream, but your uncle Dr. King did have a dream, my brother. And what is your real excuse? Why can't you study your lessons and stay in school? Why can't you study your lessons and stay in school? Free love and sex ain't nothing but a game. Don't never last, try hope. Take a chance on love, register to vote. Money ain't everything, but you could buy her.
Homeboy by Sunchi Ali. Welcome to the Qumran Report. May the peace and blessings of the life-giving creative spirit be upon you and upon your family. My name is Melvin Ishmael Johnson, coming at you live from Skid Row Studios, and I'm in the studio with my co-host, Earlene Anthony. Our call-in number is 1-800-893-9562. Now, this week on the Qumran Report, we will hear some voices from the theater with a cast of A Lesson Before Dying, which opens August 7, 2015 at the Studio Stage. And we'll be hearing more about that, about ticket information and location in our community calendar and from some of our guests. So let's go around the table and make introduction and tell what role you play. Let's start over.
Hello, my name is Court King.
It's not on.
Hello, everybody. My name is Court King. I am the director of A Lesson Before Dying. I'm also playing the character of Grant Wiggins.
Hey, what's going on, everybody? My name is Shahid Chappelle, and I am also directing in conjunction with Court King. I'm playing the role of Jefferson.
Hello, everyone. I am Lorinda Hawkins, and I am playing the role of Miss Emma.
Good evening. Wayne K. Woods. I play the role of Reverend Ambrose.
Just
Hello, my name is Fawn Stone, and I'll be playing Vivian Baptiste.
Good evening, Los Angeles. My name is Morgan Mulbey, and I'll be playing Officer Paul Bonin.
Hello, everyone. Thank you for having us here. My name is Cooper Steve Anderson. And as the director Shahid says, I play the guy everybody loves to hate, the cruel, racist Sheriff Sam Guidry.
That's right.
Okay.
Yeah.
And we also have a producer over here, Russ.
Hello. My name is Russ Andrade. I'm the producer of A Lesson Before Dying. Glad to be here. Thank you for having us.
Mm-hmm. Okay, let's start off in a nutshell. Can you tell us, without giving too much of the plot away, about what the play is about?
Well, this is a coming-of-age story about a young man by the name of Jefferson. The story takes place in 1948, Louisiana, small town called Bayonne. And it's about a young boy who is wrongfully accused for a crime that he did not commit. He was given the electric chair for a crime that he did not commit. Anything else, Shahid?
Yeah, and it deals with, you know, definitely racism, because he was cohorted by two other white men who joined him on his crusade to the store. Jefferson was cohorted to going, and again, the store trip resulted in a shootout. And the clerk ended up shooting the two white gentlemen. The white gentleman ended up shooting back. Bottom line, Jefferson was found alive in the store, and they took him right to jail. He was accused quickly and sentenced to death in the electric chair.
Okay, how about the playwright? Can you tell us a little about the playwright?
The play is based off of a novel written by Ernest J. Gaines of the same name, A Lesson Before Dying. It did have HBO specials with Don Cheadle, Cicely Tyson, Mekhi Phifer. It did very well. And this is, I believe this is the first time that it's being performed in Los Angeles in a very long time. So we want to do the story justice. It's very entertaining, very compelling, mm-hmm. very inspiring. So we're just very, very proud and very glad to be telling a story like this.
Okay. Now, can you give us the dates of the performance, the location of the theater, you know, everything that the audience would need about the ticket information and how to purchase tickets?
Okay, so we're gonna let the producer Russ give that information.
Of course, tickets can be produced at the door, $25 at the door, and $20 online. Tickets will be offered at itsmyseat.com. We also have a Facebook page which you can visit, and that is A Lesson Before Dying Play. It's facebook.com/A Lesson Before Dying Play.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And what's the address of the theater? Where's the location of the theater?
It's at 520 Northwestern Avenue in Los Angeles. It's just a couple blocks east of Melrose.
Mm-hmm. Okay, wonderful. Let's start off and talk a little about the actors. Can you tell us how did you first get involved with the theater, with acting? Anywhere you want to start?
Okay, well, I started off acting. I guess acting started off with me. I was a younger guy in foster care and was kind of introduced into acting at a school called Lee Strasberg Theater Institute. And a gentleman at the group home, his name is Arthur Miller. Give a shout out to Arthur Miller. He's out in New York. He heard my ability to sing, and he took me to the vocal class there. Turns out it's one of the world-renowned acting schools. Method acting schools is one in New York, one in London, and the one out here in Los Angeles. Mm-hmm. And I got a scholarship there, and I've been trained there, and that's where I got my start acting, and I fell in love with it.
Mm-hmm. Okay, how about you, Corey? How did you get involved?
I've been acting for about 6 years now. I'm originally from Atlanta. Mm-hmm. And I just really got into a lot of the theater out there. I was actually started off modeling right out of high school, and I was scouted. That way, and then I just kind of fell into acting, and it was really fell in love with it from there. And so I just moved to Los Angeles about a year ago mm-hmm. to take my film career to the next level. So
from where?
From the ATL. Shouts out to the ATL. Anybody out there representing?
Okay.
Well, I got my start in elementary school. Just got bitten by the bug way back then.
What's your name?
Lorinda.
Character's name?
Miss Emma.
Yeah, Lorinda.
Miss Emma in the building.
You know, and, growing up, my parents didn't really think that was a good career, so I was kind of discouraged. So it wasn't until I was an adult that I said, you know what, let me try to pursue this. So in, I'd say, the early to late 90s, that's when I got my SAG card, and theater is my first love.
Theater, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, a little bit of the small screen. Wayans Brothers, what's up? No, anyway, but yeah, I really love theater that deals with social justice issues, and that's where my heart is, and my heart is with the Skid Row community, too. So very blessed to be able to do this play.
Yeah, because you worked in one of my plays about Marcus Garvey.
And met my husband in Drama Stage Qumran. So thank you.
Yeah, okay.
This is Wayne K. Woods. I play Reverend Ambrose in the production.
Reverend.
I guess I was introduced to theater and music at the same time. Mm-hmm. My voice began to change in junior high school, actually, and I was asked to sing bass in a local group. At the same time, there was a theater going on. There was a musical going on. I got involved in the musical.
Out here in Los Angeles?
In Los Angeles. Mm-hmm. I was born and raised in Los Angeles. Isn't that strange? Yeah, so I actually fell in love with theater and music at the same time. I began to take lessons with an actress who has since passed, Lorene Tuttle. Private lessons with her. Couple of productions that she put together, and then I began to take vocal lessons, so I began to do sing opera and musical theater at the same time. Mm-hmm. So my love is theater as well.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. You can use the headphones so you can hear.
Hey there, I'm Fawn Stone, Vivian Baptiste, and I've been acting for about six and a half years, and I've done mostly indie films, and I actually write and create my own short films and web series. And this is my first play, which I'm really, really excited about.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I'm thrilled, and I just can't wait to, you know, entertain you all.
Okay.
Hi, my name is Morgan Mulbey. I'll be playing Officer Paul Bonin. And first and foremost, I just feel like it's such a privilege to work next to the likes of talent like Lorinda Hawkins and Wayne Woods, and it's been incredibly humbling experience so far because my roots are mostly in television, and that occurred for me in my late teens, and so because of my friendship with Court, you know, it was just an interesting thing or a turn of events that got me to have this opportunity. And he kind of opened that door for me and this whole experience and the potency of the story in terms of how prevalent the content is. It couldn't be at a more timely, you know, time for us. So just it gets my heart racing just talking about it, and can't wait to have a big turnout for it. So we're excited. Mm-hmm.
Okay. My name is Cooper Steve Anderson. will become the Sheriff Sam Guidry on stage. And I got involved in enacting on a dare. Someone dared me to go audition for this play, and I was cast in the dang thing.
Oh, wow.
And I fell in love with acting.
You remember what play it was?
Evidently
41st
not.
Street. 41st Street.
Not 42nd Street?
No, excuse me. No, it was Street Scene. That's the title. Street Scene. But after that, then I thought I'd have to learn how to do this, so I attended the American Academy of Dramatic Arts here in Los Angeles and
nice.
Studied with many, many private coaches, Cliff Osmond, Danny Spear, Madonna Young, Judy Bohannon, and on and on. And I've done TV and film, and did a pilot this past spring, Bentley Timeshare, very interesting, funny script. And a couple of weeks ago, I worked on a film, Zombie Teeth Nightmare.
Interesting title. Awesome.
I played a dentist patient that got upset and turns into a zombie and tries to eat the dentist.
Oh. All right, then. Look, what I'd like to do now is I would like to play a short clip from a veteran stage and film actor, David McKnight, and he's going to talk about the advice he would give to those trying to break into the business.
Understand the connectivity of each of those characters based on August Wilson's writing and a good director who, you know, directed us toward that idea.
And then you had a powerful lead actor also who you worked with before.
Yeah, my good friend Charlie Robinson, yes. Great actor, you know, and I love working with him. I worked with him before, and I have a lot of admiration and respect for his talent. It was good working with him. We had some good scenes together.
Now, I think you've already answered this, but I'm going to throw it out again. What advice would you give young actors, especially African-Americans, trying to break into the business?
I want to say that a buddy of mine brought his son to me. My son was about 12 years old. My son wants to be an actor, you know. I said, what can you tell him to do? I said, first thing I told him, get a dictionary. Okay? Get a dictionary. He said, oh, yeah, get a dictionary. He said, well, he got the computer. I said, good, stay on that computer. Because as an actor, this is one thing. You get scripts, you get stories, and you get writers. You, Melvin Ishmael Johnson, you're an excellent writer, okay? And you know a lot of words. You know what I mean? Because you studied, right? And a lot of writers are brilliant writers. August Wilson, they know a lot of different words. We're not close to all those words, but we got to understand those words. So, and that's one thing. You cannot, as an actor, go in auditioning or doing a play and not understanding the meaning of those words. I mean, thoroughly, completely. That is your responsibility. You got to know that. So first thing I tell a young person, you know, starting out, of course, go to college, get as much education as you can, but get a dictionary, go to the computer, and understand that you got to know those words and break those words down. I've done plays with actors that can't pronounce the words, don't know the definition of the words and can't pronounce the words, that's a big, big, huge mistake.
Yeah.
You follow
me? Problem.
Because, I mean, these, especially writers in Hollywood, a lot of these writers in Hollywood and the Writers Guild and so forth, these are very brilliant, educated people. They come up with some words I never could imagine I'd ever heard. What the heck does that word mean? So I got to give respect to that and go to that computer, go to that dictionary, and get a good, clear understanding of the definition and pronunciation of that word. So I can say to young people trying to make it in the business, you know, understand that you must educate yourself in all aspects of training that you can. You can do dance, you can do it. Everything you can learn to do is going to be good for your acting. Dancing, singing, mime, you know, juggling, everything that you can do. Learn to do a whole lot of things. Riding a motorcycle, riding a bicycle, roller skating, ice skating, swimming. Everything you can do to enhance that instrument, if your body is your instrument. You learn how to use that instrument in many kind of ways. Kung fu, karate, everything you can do. You know, poetry, all kinds of stuff. You know what I mean? Don't be afraid to go venture out and learn things to enhance your instrument.
Okay, that's what I want to talk about now, because, you know, it's very competitive out here in Los Angeles, because you got actors, creative people that come from all over the world. And that's why I think that's what I want to talk about now. What do you think are some of the most important steps in breaking into the business? Because there's a lot of talented people out here.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Anybody want to pick up on that, the first step?
This is Shahid Jefferson. I'm definitely understanding that question. I'm an artist. Like I said, I've been training in theater, Lee Strasberg, other teachers. I'm currently transitioning to film, and I have a commercial agent. They represent me theatrically and commercially, so they've been sending me out there for auditions, and I'm hitting the pavement, you know. And I really wanted to pick up the ball this year by picking up something. And I felt like it was God-sent project, because the material, at the timing, it's so relevant. The story that we're telling, A Lesson Before Dying, is so relevant to what's going on in today's economy and society with the black youth. Mm-hmm. But I'm grateful that I had this project in my hands, because it's like I'm taking ownership of my career. And that directly answers your question, is that we're taking back the creative part that God has given us and manifesting it on our terms. And this project is an outlet for Court and I and the other talent at this table to manifest their talent with the project that they are pretty much in control. It's a grassroots level, but definitely all the actors are trained and professional, but it's about having the talent, looking at how you can maximize your own talent by taking ownership of it and doing something about it, putting some projects out there.
Okay. Anybody want to pick up? But how about especially professionalism, you know, on how to prepare for auditions, being on time, knowing your part and all of that kind of stuff like that, that's important. Knowing what David was talking about, understanding the unions that were out here, what union represents the actors and all of that. Anybody want to pick up on
Cass,
that?
Jump in. Lorinda, I know you said you're in the union. Mention the union. You want to talk?
Yes. Oh, okay. Well, I am SAG-AFTRA member. And my journey has been kind of interesting with the union journey. I was blessed to be able to get into SAG early on, like I mentioned, in like the late 90s. But then I fell upon some hard times. And they have where you can declare yourself financial core. And that happens in a lot of unions, where it allows you to do non-union and union work and just pay the bare minimum dues because of financial hardship. Mm-hmm. I thought that was the way to go. But apparently, if I were to have it, if I were to be able to make the decision again, I would not have chosen that road, because you are looked at as a scab, basically, if you go down that way. And it turned out I didn't really want to do any of the non-union jobs that came across, because, you know, I needed to make money, and a lot of them were not paying. And I'm like, well, what is this? And so then my life took a turn, and I couldn't even pay the bare minimum of dues. So then I basically got to a point where I was out of the union completely for a while. And just recently, like last year, I had to go before the disciplinary board and plead my case to try to get back into the union after it became SAG and AFTRA because, you know, I talked about my journey, but my journey is one of homelessness as well. So, I mean, I had a serious journey and I'm like, please, I can't make this stuff up. This is what happened. But there are options. If you are experiencing financial hardship, you can like take a leave. You don't have to go the way of financial core, although, you know, some actors do choose that road. But in my opinion, if I were to have it to do over again, I would have chosen to just take a leave from the union instead of going financial core. That's just my experience.
How do you prepare for a role, for an audition? Anybody want to talk about when you go for an audition?
Wayne,
here's what we're trying to do here, trying to give some advice. To a lot of these little young actors
I'll chime in quickly.
Just say
Morgan.
Name.
Yeah, Morgan, playing Officer Paul Bonin. And first to touch on the first topic as far as, like, I just feel like a lot of the young talent in the city has to do those fundamental things initially. That's just my opinion, to build the foundation, whether that's background work or student films or small plays or whatever they can do to kind of get their feet wet. Because I think in the long run, it prepares you more once those bigger doors do begin to open. And then what was the second question?
How do you prepare?
Right, preparing for a role. So I was telling
Wayne. Prepare for an audition.
An audition.
Yeah, Wayne.
Well, I guess it's even similar to like a role. I was telling Wayne earlier today that I read an article by Jared Leto like a couple years ago. And his philosophy on it was similar to mine in the sense that he said, if you want to really be a successful actor or entertainer for that matter, go out and live your life and gain as many experiences as you can. And it is similar to the guy that we listened to as far as like learn to skateboard, snowboard, wrestle, whatever it is, because it adds layers to you as a person and that will inevitably translate into your work and be undeniable and viewed and seen and invisible. So I think it's sort of a strange dichotomy that you go out and you develop more of who you are, and then you bring that to your art, and it shows.
Okay.
I'd like to add something to that. Acting is instinctive, you know, and that is what he was talking about a moment ago. Instinctive, you know, learning or just experiencing the things of life and translating that into stage or film. There was... what you've got to realize, too, is you don't want to take things too serious when you're going on an audition. I learned that a long time ago. When I first started acting, everything was so serious and everything was just... Yeah. Everything, this was it. Everything was on the line. Mm-hmm. And I found myself tensing up every time I went to an audition because of it. But then I had stepped away for a moment. I came back and realized, okay, well, it's... If I do, I do. If I don't, I don't. You know, this is not the end of all, you know, my career. So I go in saying, okay, I'm just going to have fun doing what I'm doing. And that's what it's all about, is having fun doing what you're doing. I was sitting in a commercial audition one day, and this was a callback. And the callback, I was sitting in the room looking at a lot of faces I had seen before on film and television, in commercials, in film and everything. As a matter of fact, a gentleman walked and sat behind me and talking to someone about the things that he had done, the film he'd just done, you know, Transformers, things he'd just come off of, things he was about to do. And I'm sitting there and I'm going through my mind, okay, no, I don't have this. Too many other people in this room, you know, that have done things a lot more than I've done, you know? So I had to get back into the frame of mind that I wanted to be, and that was just to say, no, I'm going in just to have fun. I'm going to do what I do and just have fun and relax and doing what I do. Well, come to find out, when I went in and auditioned, had my call back, did what I wanted to do. The director said immediately, he said, don't cut your hair, don't shave your mustache, don't do anything. So then I got a call when I left the audition from my agent saying that you are on avail, which means that, you know, as long as the commercial, the sponsors say the same thing, then you've got the commercial. So I walked out looking at all the people around the room and thinking, okay, it's not all about what they've done or who they are. It's about who they want at the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Beautiful, beautiful. Yeah. Okay. Look, let's talk a little. What were your rehearsal process like? How long? How many weeks you spent in rehearsal? What was it?
Well, the rehearsal schedule at first was we kind of tried to chop it up. We didn't really want to overwhelm us or the actors with because it's a very heavy content. So we really kind of wanted to chop it up. And at first, we would kind of focus on 3 or 4 scenes each. But as we progress and as we move closer towards opening night, we definitely ramp up the rehearsals.
Okay. And you got your stage manager and all of that?
Yeah. We have wardrobe people, hair and makeup people, stage manager, stage hands, casting crew. Yeah.
Okay, look, let's do a little short scene from it. You want to set the scene?
Sure. So this is a scene that is in the first act. So basically, what goes on in this scene is my character, Grant Wiggins, and Jefferson, and his godmother, Miss Emma, and the Reverend are coming in to see Jefferson for the first time, all three of them together coming into the courthouse to see Jefferson for the first time.
Young man, I pray for you every night. The Lord hears my prayers and hears his word. Put your faith in him and he'll see you through.
And eat something for me.
Got any corn? Jefferson.
Corn?
For a hoe.
Jefferson.
A hoe, Jefferson? Jefferson, you ain't no hog.
Just throw it to him. He'll eat it.
Jefferson, don't.
I'll never throw nothing to you, Jefferson. You throw a bone to a dog, slap to a pig. You ain't no hog, Jefferson.
Ain't no hog. Feed the hog.
Stop him.
Feed the hog.
Jefferson.
Just fatten him up.
Jefferson, behave.
Fatten him up. Go ahead. Feed the hog. Fatten him up for that chair. That's what you want, ain't it?
Let's see.
Oh, man, it's powerful. I got to come see this play. comments on it?
So this is Jefferson. This guy is a guy who's been convicted of murder and sentenced to electric chair. And he's being confronted with his godmother, and he's just been going through this whole mental depression, darkness, death hanging over him. He's going to get fried in an electric chair for a crime that he didn't commit. Jefferson, in the storyline, is a fairly young guy. It's been played, various actors, the actors that have played Jefferson have been kind of different ages, but that's kind of what that was about. Jefferson is refusing to see himself as a human being. He was called a hog by one of the, prosecutors?
His own attorney, yes. Defense attorney.
So he's just kind of feeling dehumanized and out of control at that moment, and Grant and everybody tries to bring some order to Reverend.
Okay, how long is the play in terms of running time? Is it intermission also?
The play runs about 1:30.
Beautiful time.
Yeah. And we have like a 10-minute intermission.
Okay, any comments on that scene? Anybody else want to chime in?
Well, I just, Miss Emma, from her standpoint, is just trying to bring humanization back into Jefferson, because she's seen it all. I mean, being a slave and being dehumanized all her life, but trying to rise above that through it all. And, you know, she used her spirituality. So I believe she understands the power of words. So when that defense attorney spoke that in that courtroom, that he's just a hog, that it had a lot of power. And for Jefferson to actually embrace that and say, you know what? Well, then I'll just be a hog.
I am a hog.
Right. And just kill me like a hog.
Right.
No, that can't happen. And so it's very important to her that he understands that he is not a hog. And even if he is going to die, he can still die a man with his dignity as God created him to be. And he has never been anybody's animal or hog. I think it's powerful.
And that's where...
Reverend, you want to say something?
Absolutely. Reverend Ambrose is... His mission in this whole thing is to complete his call.
His call in this is to make sure that this young man receives salvation, the salvation of God, before he meets God, before he gets to the other side. He wants to make sure that he's made his reservations for heaven, so to speak. And he wants to make sure that's done because of the call.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And Vivian.
It's interesting, though, because Court plays the part. He's actually an atheist in the story. So it's interesting that that the godmother of Jefferson has called upon him, he's also had left the small town, went and got an education at a northern university, came back to the small town, and really doesn't want to be there. But now it's been assigned to him the task of somehow bringing
dignity
and in a sense a different kind of spiritual level of salvation to Jefferson, and teach him how to accept the fact, the inevitable fact, that he is going to die.
Now, Russ, how did you come to produce this? One of the director pitched it to you?
No, actually, I came upon it myself. I was going to, I was looking for a play, a powerful play, a political statement, because I've always been interested in activism and political statements as an artist. And I was going to do Mamet's Race. And hadn't even realized it actually was being performed as I thought about it at the Kirk Douglas Theater, and had applied for the rights anyway, but was refused, I think, because of that. So I was just doing online research, and I'd never heard of the play before, and reading through Wikipedia, which is always a very, very nice, thorough resource, and started describing the play, and I thought it was very, very powerful. And the fact that it hadn't been performed very much, other than the HBO, they had made an HBO presentation of it in 1996. But it was more based on the actual, on the book. That was a full-length actuation of the book. And this is a play which was written by Romulus Linney, who was white, actually, and wrote this play and had grasped the heart of what was going on it. Okay. This play actually starts after the trial. The book explores from the time of the crime, when the robbery was committed in the liquor store, all the way through the end when Jefferson is electrocuted. But the play only picks up directly after. Which was the opening scene that they did in the storehouse.
Okay.
When he's been convicted, and now the quest is to try to bring it to instill dignity and the acceptance that he is going to die.
And Vivian, how did your character fit into the play?
Yeah, Vivian.
Well, it's Fawn Stone.
She plays a love interest with Grant. But she's also the backbone to Grant. She's the one that inspires him, encourages him to be a man, so that Jefferson can be a man or die like a man. So she's definitely an integral piece into the play.
Mm-hmm. Now, how about the two law enforcement? how do that fit into it? The
sheriff and deputy.
Yeah.
My job is to execute the boy, not torture him. Mm-hmm. I would rather watch a dumb hog die in that electric chair than a upset, out of his mind, aggravated boy frying it.
And that is a line in the play.
Those are from the lines from
another
the play.
Preview, guys.
Yeah, and I would just have to entirely agree with what Russ said. I mean, this story is so layered in terms of the political aspects of it, and then the emotional aspects, the spiritual aspects. I mean, it's so powerful, this story. And in addition to that, there was something else. I'm drawing a blank again. My character, Paul Bonin, it's interesting because each character within this story, without giving any spoiler alerts, there's conflict between basically every character interaction contains a lot of conflict
high
and a lot
stakes.
Of fireworks. High stakes, a lot of grinding, a lot of just...
This is not a boring play.
Yeah, that's and cool. In terms of the rehearsals, we've had to go there and, you know, and go to those spaces within ourselves and get uncomfortable, which I think is going to make this production amazing. But that conflict is within each character and then as a whole in the whole story as mm-hmm. well, which sort of... I don't want to give anything away, but it kind of leads to the, you know, to the resolution of the story in the end.
So. Okay. Look, let's take a little short break for our community calendar, and we'll come back more into our discussion.
This is the community calendar of upcoming events. Thursday, July 23rd, 2015 at 7:30 p.m., Drama Stage Qumran, L.A. Labor Fest, and Public Work Improvisational Theater presents a reading of If the Shoe Fits, Voices from Solitary Confinement. After the reading, there will be a Q&A, a time to share stories and discuss strategies and ways to take action. Also, there's a letter writing campaign that's going on, and you can sign up for legislative visits. This is a statewide coordinated action to end solitary confinement. The location of the event is Westside Peace Center, 3916 Sepulveda Boulevard, Culver City, California, 90230. It's a free event, free parking, and all are invited to attend. For more information, you can email lalaborfest@gmail.com or call 310-704-3217. And you're asked to save this date, Saturday, August 30th, 2015, from 4 p.m. to 7 p.m. Industrial Green will be holding its first annual summer fundraising event. The location is Lot 613 Imperial. This is a family-friendly event. There will be food available, drinks, music, displays of current and future projects, and much, much more. For more information, please contact Industrial Green, industrialdistrictgreen.org, and this is a Catherine Magnini project. If you have a community event that you would like announced on our show, send the information to dramastage1@yahoo.com, attention Earlene Anthony, and the call-in number for our show, a reminder is 800-893-9562. Now, back to our hosts.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Earlene Anthony. We're back with our in-studio guest, the cast of Lesson Before Dying. Also want to mention that the cast will be back in the studio the second Monday in August, and that will be in between their performance run. Now, what I want to do, now I want to go around, and I want to talk about what is your process for learning lines for the actors that's off into it. Let's run around the table and talk about your process.
I think really quickly, the basics for me is just repetition, going over my lines, repetition. I found also just knowing what's going on in the scene pertaining to my character and how my character feels about what he's saying. That helps me as an actor to psychologically remember and connect to the lines. And it kind of is rememorizing your lines on an unconscious level because you're knowing exactly the psyche of what you're saying and why you're saying it. And it gives you more motivation to memorize the lines and keep them embedded in your mind. But repetition, 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 saying your lines over and over and over and over, nothing I think can beat that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just to add on to that, repetition, there's no way to get around that. Just practice, practice, practice your tail off. And for me, it's really just taking someone else's words and finding a way to say it in a way that connects to your mind, your body, your subconscious. And then it won't be so much as you remembering a bunch of words, but a string of emotions kind of tied together. And I don't know if that's deep, but that's kind of just my method, how I kind of just dissect it.
Also, just want to affirm what's been said before me. I mean, it's just finding that time to just put into it, to just remember your lines, just memorize it, mnemonics, whatever you have to do. Mm-hmm. But also to keep in mind that you need to respect the writer's words, because some actors like to ad-lib, yeah. And you don't want to do that if you don't have permission from the writer. You want to mm-hmm. keep the sanctity, mm-hmm. the sanctity of the words. So you really want to make sure when you're remembering the lines to do your best to do it word for word.
I guess I just want to say ditto on all three people that just spoke a moment ago. Because the integral part of getting into a character and remembering lines is, as was said before me, understanding who you are, where you are, and why you are. You know, that gives you a point of contact with that person you're becoming or you're supposed to be. And then again, it's not so much having to, of course, it's repetition, but it's not so much having to remember that line because it's a piece, it's a line on a piece of paper, but it's because of who you are, you know, and yeah, that becomes who you are. Yeah. So those lines become you, mm-hmm. you know.
Makes sense.
Okay.
Yeah. I would say it's a combination of listening and just connecting. Listening to your partner and, you know, understanding what they're saying and connecting to them, and then it just naturally comes mm-hmm. when you're connected to the words and to what's really going on.
Okay.
Yeah, when I learn how to do lines, I'll let you know. No, I'm just kidding. yes, quadrito. I have to say, like, what Court said, you cannot get around the repetition aspect of it. It's just, it's like exercise. You have to go through that. For me, my process starts initially very mechanical. So in terms of the integrity of the words, it's like making sure that's basically exact and accurate, and then coming back later to identify what that means for me and how to attach the emotion to it and then bring that to the piece.
Mm-hmm.
Cooper here. I tried to get inside the character's head because the writer doesn't write one word without a reason for it. My first line is a greeting to Miss Emma. But further down the page, you find out I got an axe to grind with her. Mm. She has upset me. She has become my nemesis. So it's not a friendly greeting, even though it's written that way.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Look, let's play another little short clip from David McKnight, and I asked him the same questions when I had him in the studio. Something else, David. What is your process for learning lines?
Oh, boy, that's a good one. That's a good question. You know, I go to the bottom line and say by rote, you know, and that is by doing the best that you can by any way, any means necessary.
Repetition.
Oh, absolutely, by rote. But also what it depends on is the individual. Some actors, individuals, have photographic memories. Some actors, individuals, don't have. They have a semi-photographic memory. Some actors, individuals, and they have talent, but they don't have good memory skills. So depending upon what your level is, depends upon what you're going to have to do in order to learn those lines. Now, if you have a photographic memory, they come to you as a snap. But if you recognize the fact, well, I'm a slow learner, it takes me a while, then that means you got a woodshed. You got to start early and dig deep. You know what I mean? And you do it by every means necessary. You could, you know, say them over and over and over and over and over, day and night, morning, noon and night. You can write them down, take them, write it in pencil over and over and over. Because when you take a pencil and write something down, it does enhance your memory a little bit more than just speaking it out.
Mm-hmm,
with a pencil in your hand, you just write those lines out and you try to do it from memory. First, you can do it by just looking at the script and then writing it out verbatim as you're reading it from the script. And there's something about that hand, the pencil in your hand, mind, pencil contact, and writing will dig it a little bit deeper into your memory. You do that. Then you can put it on tape. You put it on tape and you can listen to it over and over and over. Then, like a lot of my actor friends and myself, what we do, we go to the park. We go out by the ocean or something. We get out there and speak out those lines. You know what I'm talking about. Speak those lines over and over and over. You whisper those lines. You sing those lines. You do everything you can. When I was starting out as an actor, one of the things that I enjoyed doing, what I would try to find every aspect of how I could perform my lines. I sing my lines. I laugh my lines. Mm. I get angry with all my lines, everything. I'm angry at all through every line in it. I laugh at every line. I sing every line. You know, I clown every line. I do everything because let me share this with you, and I do coach actors. One of the things that we do as actors, our bodies are our instrument. Every aspect of our body is our instrument. We don't play, you know, if you're a piano player, your piano is your instrument. Mm-hmm. If you're a horn player, horn is your instrument. But see, our bodies are our instrument. So that means it's our ears, our eyes, the voice, you know, our energy, everything, you know, our mannerisms, movements, and everything else. So we have to train that instrument. And we have to work with that instrument. Mm-hmm. And so you take that instrument and put it in any all kinds of technique and environments that you can in order to be able to use it when the time is necessary. Mm-hmm. But getting back to remembering those lines, you just do it over and over and over and over and over until you got it.
Okay, that's veteran stage and film actor David McKnight. Look, let's do the second little short scene, and then we'll go for some closing comments and contact information. What's the second one that you're going to do?
Okay, so we're going to do a scene between Grant and the Reverend. And basically what happens in this scene, just a kind of a little overview. I am in my classroom doing work, and the Reverend walks up on me and kind of questions me about the things that I've been talking to Jefferson about when I go into the courtroom with him alone.
Good morning.
Good morning, Reverend. You know, the kids don't get in here for another hour.
Sacks and bags. What are they for?
Oh, the children brought some pecans for Jefferson. Would you like to have a seat?
I understand the date's been set.
3 weeks?
Hmm.
20 days?
3 weeks.
20 days.
He ain't saved.
Listen, Reverend, I can't help you there.
And why can't you? Because you educated?
I teach reading, writing, and arithmetic, all right? You save souls, Reverend.
Well, he don't need no more arithmetic. When you going back?
Next week.
What you going to talk about?
I don't know, Reverend.
Well, I'm going back tomorrow. I'm going to talk about God.
Well, Jefferson needs to hear it.
He needs to hear there's a better world than this one and believe it. But I need your help. He listens to you more than me.
Look, I'm sorry, Reverend. I don't believe in that other world.
Meaning you educated. Son, you don't know nothing. I'm the one that's educated by life and by death. But you look down on me. Just a preacher. Just a liar. What do I preach? You say fairy tales and lies. If I do, if that's so, then I lie. To save souls. I preach to people in pain. I tell lies, son, so people will live. When the children of man have grief and sorrow and the awful pain of this life, where is hope? None, there is none till God speaks, till God says there is hope. There is blessed release from pain and sorrow across yon river. And some of us believe to relieve that pain. Did you hear what I'm trying to say to you, boy?
Reverend, save Jefferson's soul, all right? I'm not standing in your way.
Yes, you are.
You know what? You're mad. You're mad and you're jealous that Miss Emma brought me into this. Well, I wish to God that she hadn't and you weren't. But what do you want me to do about it?
First time you say God. You insult me. You got no time for a preacher or the Bible. But your fine education is not enough. Life is harder than that. Why? Because people got pain. You don't give them arithmetic. Look what pain done for you, for your Aunt Lou, Miss Emma, and others. Bleeding, hands bleeding from picking cotton. Scabs on their knees from scrubbing floors. Putting a dollar in a jar one at a time to send a boy, you, to college. Why? To come back and stop the pain. But what have you done, teacher? Nothing. Jefferson's gonna die, not saved. And she's gonna die in that pain. because you are helping nothing.
I am doing the best that I can.
Ooh, powerful, powerful, powerful.
Lesson before dying, y'all.
We're winding down. We just got a couple minutes. LA. Why don't you give us the basic information again for those who want to purchase tickets, how they can purchase tickets, the location of the theater.
The theater is located at 520 Northwestern Avenue, just south of Melrose, at the Studio Stage. Tickets will be available at itsmyseat.com. Our email address is albdplay@gmail.com, standing for, of course, A Lesson Before Dying. That's albdplay@gmail.com. Mm-hmm. And we have a Facebook page, facebook.com/A Lesson Before Dying Play. And so also tickets are available at the door. First performance is August 7th on a Friday. And so we're running each weekend in August, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday at 8 p.m.
Any preview performances?
I'm sorry?
Is there any preview performances or just straight open?
Not really. We haven't set any preview performance, but we are doing tech the last weekend in July. We're having 3 weekends of tech, and we'll see.
Okay, so we wind it down less than a minute. I'd like to extend a special thanks to the cast of A Lesson Before Dying.
Thank you.
Yeah, I think I'm going to pull that up on YouTube tonight so I can look at the original ones. Yeah. A powerful piece.
But this is going to be the best retelling of the story.
Yes. Wonderful. Yes. Okay. Now, please listen to past shows of the Qumran Report by Googling in Qumran Report. Thank you for tuning in to the Qumran Report from your host, Melvin Ishmael Johnson, my co-host, Earlene Anthony. May the peace and blessings of the life-giving creative spirit be upon you and upon your family. I leave you with the song that opened the show, Homeboy by Sunchi Ali.
Homeboy. There's only one blood, cause it ain't no sense in us trampling on the stones. It's us, down, down to the bone. Blood is thick, waters were known well, cousins were kept apart, mothers were off, memories. Fathers were not favorites on the farm, for he could do some harm, he could wreck the master scheme. For he, brothers,